New heading, Achieving a Balance Between Getting Results and Developing Capability. The key to the principle of alignment is to always begin with the end in mind, with the desired results. What kind of results are you getting in the marketplace? Are your shareholders happy with the return on their investment? What about your employees? Are they happy with the return on their mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional investment? What about suppliers? What about the community? Do you have any sense of social responsibility toward the kids, toward the schools, toward the streets, toward the air and water, toward the context in which your employees work and raise their families? What about all these results from these stakeholders? What about the customers? How is it going? What are the results? How do you benchmark against world-class standards? You have to study and examine all these stakeholder results and then examine the gap between those results and your strategy. You see, effectiveness is the balance between the production of desired results and production capability. In other words, it's the golden eggs that people want and the goose that lays them. Sometimes we call this the PPC balance, P for production of desired results, PC for production capability. The essence of effectiveness is achieving the results you want in a way that enables you to get even more of these results in the future. Over the last 10 years, there have been many approaches developed to measure the PPC balance. I have frequently taught the importance of 360-degree feedback, suggesting that the first 90 degrees represents financial accounting and the remaining 270 degrees consists of scientifically gathered information on the perceptions of the organization's key stakeholders and the strength of their feelings around those perceptions. There are many names for this kind of feedback. One of the strongest recent movements calls it the balanced scorecard. Sometimes I have called this approach double bottom line accounting. Traditional accounting is always focused on the single bottom line, the golden eggs. Double bottom line accounting also shows respect for the goose, quantifying the health of the goose by summarizing the quality of the organization's relationship with all of its key stakeholders, customers, suppliers, associates and their families, government, community, environment, etc. You can imagine the power of having a two-page summary of the present and future health and strength of your organization, one page devoted to the financial statement, that is, the present fruits of prior efforts, and the other giving you a leading indicator of your relationships with the stakeholders, which will produce all your future results. The important thing is to come up with what we call a scoreboard, a compelling scoreboard. In fact, the people who are involved and who will be evaluated need to participate in establishing this compelling performance scoreboard so that it reflects the criteria built into the mission, values, and strategy of an organization so that they can continuously stay aligned with the process and be both responsible and accountable. They need to emotionally connect to it and to own it. This is also true of individuals, teams, departments, or any person who has responsibility to complete a task or handle a project. In short, everyone should be involved in developing the scoreboard and then be accountable to it. Additional practical application suggestions on creating a compelling scoreboard will be given in Chapter 14. By the way, you know what we found out? Hardly anyone measures progress on their most important goals. Only 10%, 1 in 10 of the XQ respondents report that they have a clear, accurate, visible scoreboard that provides genuine feedback. Actionable intelligence for frontline decision making is the imperative in the knowledge economy. Let me illustrate the importance of this idea of the scoreboard feedback system by sharing an experience with you of an organization that came face to face with these diagnostic questions. Once I was speaking to a national association of newspaper publishers and editors at a large conference. To prepare for the event, I gathered data from cultural audits performed on various newspaper organizations. They indicated trust levels, commonality of purpose and values, systemic misalignment, and consequent disempowerment in the industry. Before presenting the data, I decided to try a different approach. Walking around the large hall with a microphone and asking the questions, what is the essential role of newspapers in society? What is your central purpose? As I handed the microphone to person after person, they unhesitatingly spoke of the absolutely vital role that newspaper organizations play in our society. They believe the deeper analysis in the print media keeps government honest and public officials accountable and visible to the public. A cumulative expression focused around serving the country and our communities by preserving our most basic values. Freedom, government being accountable to the people, the preservation of the checks and balances identified in the Constitution, and helping to inform people in order to preserve the ideals of our democratic republic and free enterprise system. Then, still walking around the audience, I shifted my questions to, do you really believe those purposes? Really? Do you feel them in your heart? As I walked around the room asking people to respond, the response was unanimously yes, yes. The next question was tougher. How do you know if a person really believes particular values? How do you know if a person really believes what he says that he values? As different answers came forth, I posited the idea that one of the tests would be that the person tries to live true to his or her values. I suggested that integrity toward values indicates real belief. They seemed to universally agree. Then I got to the key question. How many of your newspaper organizations possess some function that is similar to the function you provide to the community and the country? They were puzzled by my question, so I asked, how many of you have a function inside your own organizations or culture to keep people honest, accountable, and aligned with your most basic ideals and values? Only about 5% raised their hands. Then I shared with them the data that had been gathered from their cultural audits. I showed them the extreme levels of distrust, interpersonal conflict, interdepartmental rivalries, misalignment, and profound disempowerment of people. I then proceeded to share with them the idea of the four roles, of starting first with themselves, of beginning the process of involving others and clarifying purposes, then of setting up information and reinforcement and reward systems to create an optimum environment of empowerment. Many of these editors and publishers walked away from that event with a totally different paradigm of leadership. It was a very interesting and illuminating experience for all of us. The importance of this kind of feedback applies not only to an organization, but also to individuals within an organization. At one time, I did a training program for the commanding generals of an Air Force in a country with a history of challenge and conflict. I was talking about the importance of getting feedback from their key stakeholders, and I noticed that the generals were nodding their heads in agreement. I turned to the general in charge and said, "Does this mean you're using such a system of feedback and measurement?" He said, "Absolutely, that's the way we train these people. They're top pilots, not trained managers. So everyone gets an annual printout of the perceptions of all those they interface with and the strength of those perceptions. They use it as a basis for their personal and professional development. And no one gets promoted unless they have high marks, including from their subordinates." I said, "You have no idea how hard it is to get that concept brought into many organizations in my country. What keeps it from becoming a popularity contest?" Looking at me with disdain, he replied, "Stephen, the very survival of our country depends on these people, and they know it. Do you really think we would allow ourselves to enter into popularity contests? In fact, sometimes the most unpopular people among us are given the highest marks because they perform, consistently perform. Aligning structures and systems with values and strategy is one of the toughest of all leadership and management challenges, simply because structures and systems represent the past, tradition, expectations, and assumptions. Many people derive their security from the predictability and certainty of such structures and systems. They truly are sacred cows and cannot be ignored or kicked around unless there is deep buy-in and emotional connection to the strategic pathfinding criteria. Consider the following contrast between the structures and systems of the old industrial age control model with the new knowledge worker age release or empowerment model. While it is helpful to compare the two in contrast, the real world would put these more on a continuum than either or. At the very least, perhaps these contrasting lists shows the extreme ends of each continuum and may serve to highlight the enormous leverage of aligning cultures, structures, and systems with the pathfinding criteria. Regarding leadership, the industrial age control model focuses upon a position or formal authority. The new knowledge worker age or release and empowerment model focuses upon leadership becoming a choice, moral authority. Management under the old model, control things and people. Under the new model, control things, but release or empower people. Under structure, the old model is hierarchical and bureaucratic. The new model is flatter, boundaryless, and flexible. Under motivation, the old model is external, carrot and sticking. Under the new model, internal, because of the release of a whole person's needs, body, mind, heart, and spirit. Under performance appraisal, the old model is external, using the sandwich technique or something like it. Under the new model, it's self-evaluation, using 360-degree feedback. Under information, the old model is primarily short-term and deals with financial reports. Under the new model, it's a balanced scoreboard, so that you look at both long and short-term, at P and PC. Under communication, the old model is primarily top-down. Under the new model, it's open, up, down, sideways. Culture under the old model is based on social rules, which focus upon the mores and norms of the workplace. Under the new model, it's principle-centered values and focuses upon the economic rules of the marketplace so that the norms are in harmony with the marketplace. Under budgeting, the old model is primarily top-down. The new model is open, flexible, and synergistic. Under training and development, the old model makes training and development a kind of sideshow, expendable, very skill-oriented. Under the new model, it's fundamental. It's under the main tent. It deals with the maintenance, with strategic, with the whole person, and with values. People under the old model are basically an expense on the P&L statement, and lip services given to people being our most important asset. And in the new model, people are an investment with the highest leverage on every other investment. And in the old model, voice is generally unimportant for most, except for maybe a few at the top. And in the new model, is strategic for all, so that a complementary team is formed. Now let's look at a film. This film is called Berlin Wall. The Berlin Wall was up for over 40 years, over two generations. Imagine how deep the division between East and West became in the minds and hearts of the people. What a profound separation. What a profound contrast. When in 1989 it physically came down, it didn't necessarily come down in the hearts and minds of most of the people. It was like a sacred cow, like the old structures and systems of the industrial age. Tradition dies hard. I'll never forget a cab ride into East Berlin with no Berlin Wall, and hearing the cab driver complain about the feelings of insecurity he felt adjusting to a freer market and a more democratic society. He preferred the security and stability that the old regime and Wall represented. This was a shock to me, to hear him talk this way. He said most of the old-timers feel that way and that they are critical of the new generation, who prefer greater freedom to security. So as you view this film, think of how truly difficult it is for people to develop a new mindset, a new paradigm, a new and different way of thinking, and then how it requires a new skill set and a new tool set. Think also of how futile it would be to teach people the new skills and tools with the old mindset. It would be like putting new wine in old bottles. Please insert the companion DVD into your DVD player and select Berlin Wall.